Here we are with Joe Courtney, Congressman extraordinaire from the state of Connecticut, who represents a district where everybody wants to be, right on that Long Island Sound and out there. Hey, I couldn't help but thinking about you. A submarine, I think it was Indonesian, blew up and everybody aboard died. You know, I know that you watch submarines and the building of submarines from your district. What'd you make of that?
I mean, it's a reminder that, you know, that part of any country's fleet is, you know, operating in an environment that does not sustain human life. And that, you know, the people who, you know, step forward to volunteer for that kind of service, I think really, you know, deserve the highest respect. It also, I think, is a reminder that the U.S. Navy, you know, which after Thresher, which was a submarine that, as you and I are old enough to remember, sank and the entire crew was lost, you know, back in the early 70s, I think it was, or late 60s. You know, the Navy instituted what's called SubSafe, which is a whole level of training and retraining and retraining and certification that, I mean, it is really drilled into that service like no other. I mean, frankly, other branches have actually adopted SubSafe as a way of avoiding the things like the collisions that took place out in the Indo-Pacific region a few years back. The McCain, USS McCain, right, was sadly part of that, and also the Air Force. So, you know, again, I know anytime a sub sinks, and it happened with the Russian sub, the Kursk, back in 2000, I remember I was at the Democratic National Convention when the news came out about that, and you know, the U.S. Navy rushed to try and provide assistance, just like we did to the Indonesian Navy. There is like this real, you know, incredible bond that submariners have about, you know, at peacetime, about really making sure that, you know, we kind of help each other, and it's a terrible tragedy.
Wow. Okay, so let's go back to the American Rescue Plan. The funding is being distributed to states and localities this spring. What's the impact been on your second district in Connecticut?
So one of the really great features about the Rescue Plan is that, unlike the CARES Act, which did have some state and local benefit, the money, though, all went to state capitals, and it really gave governors, you know, really very, I think, sweeping power about how the funding got released. The rescue plan took a different approach, which is that we carved up that pot and made sure that half of the money went to local communities, and actually had some, you know, pretty explicit prescriptive formulas for how that was going to get distributed. And in particular, communities less than populations less than 50,000, we prescribed the fact, and also put really strict timelines for Treasury and state capitals to get that money out to the local communities. We just didn't want small town, which obviously is a huge part of the state of New York and in the Albany region, and eastern Connecticut, to sort of get sort of at the last mile and left with crumbs. And so, so as you point out, you know, the funding, there was a 60-day clock from when President Biden signed it into law on March 11th for that funding to get distributed, and we're coming up real fast on that timeline. Frankly, every local official and every governor is looking at Janet Yellen right now, and refreshing their email to see if the guidance has come out and the final numbers has been released. But again, talking to these local communities who last year during the pandemic, you know, had to put off projects, had to you know, take on a lot of overtime, you know, had to you know, eat into their cash reserves. This is extremely welcome. And sadly, you know, when we had the vote on the rescue plan, which not one Republican supported that bill in the House or the Senate, it was the state and local funding, which really, bizarrely in my mind, became sort of the red line for Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy, who, you know, kind of kept characterizing it as blue state bailouts, you know, blah, 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 which, you know, my Republican mayors and first selectmen, I've got a lot of them in eastern Connecticut, they are not refusing the assistance. I can that. And the same holds true for Republican governors. Senator Scott from Florida, I think, yeah, that's the guy, right, with the shaved head. He had tried to get DeSantis in Florida to refuse the money. And DeSantis, who's about as pro-Trump as any Republican governor in the country, told him to get lost. Republican states took some heavy hits because of the pandemic, particularly oil patch states, because the price of oil and gas collapsed. And so, I just think it was a political blunder of Olympic proportions for the Republicans to take this, hardcore party line opposition to a bill which the polling shows has 70% public support.
That's astounding to me. The idea that so many Americans could be for so many of these programs, and legislators worrying about their own seats, Republican legislators worrying about their own seats, won't move off a dime. You must talk to them. Do they ever confess to you that they're ashamed? They should be.
On this one, I could never quite figure it, because, there are some Republicans who come from purple districts and suburban districts who, we can pick up support from them on a lot of bills. But this one just was a complete mystery to me. Jerome Powell, Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, who is, as we all know, Trump's appointment. I mean, watching him on 60 Minutes, throughout the course of the pandemic, and really right before we passed the rescue plan, strongly endorsed more fiscal assistance from Congress and said, don't worry about the debt at this point. It's more important to get this economy back on its feet as quickly as possible. And pointed out that state and local funding, in many respects, is the most efficient way to get support out to communities. And Mark Zandi, John McCain's economist, on the 2008 campaign, same thing, is that, they all, economists who look at fiscal relief, understand that, state and local is where you really get the help where the need is. And again, it just it boggles my mind that as a party they took that strong an opposition. I think we even got Susan Collins on the Recovery Act under Obama. I think she voted for it, and Murkowski may have, but not one supported this. And as we see the help for premiums for the Affordable Care Act plans, the Obamacare plans, which is going to really put money in people's pockets, the refundable child tax credit, which Rosa DeLauro from Connecticut championed, called it Social Security for kids. I mean, these are going to be a big positive change for families, and if they want us to own it, I embrace that.
I want to ask you about Afghanistan. Are we doing the right thing in getting out?
So we had a lot of briefings on armed services and with actually Secretary Austin, Secretary of Defense, and Secretary of State Blinken. And I share a lot of people's sort of trepidation a little bit, but the answer, I think, is at this point, it was the right call. When Trump signed the agreement with the Taliban in 2019, we had about 9,000 troops there, which was a credible force level to provide some counterterrorism on the ground and force protection and training and equipping, etc. During the course of the time that that agreement was in place, the troop level, the day Joe Biden was sworn into office, was 2,500. And again, the Taliban agreed in 2019 that they would basically leave U.S. troops alone. That's why we have not had the casualty figures that we have seen in the past in Afghanistan. That was part of the deal. So, for Biden at this point, he's now at a place where there's 2,500 troops left, which is insufficient to really do much more than protect the embassy. And maybe some special forces. And a clock that was about to run out in terms of the truce that, we had agreed to with the Taliban. And I frankly think it would have put those 2,500 troops more in harm's way to reject or overturn the deal that was in place, as opposed to trying to make it more, executable, which is what they did by pushing back the departure date to September 1st. at our hearing at Armed Services, I asked General McKenzie, who's in charge of Central Command for that whole area there, you know, if a group like Al-Qaeda or if, you know, a group like ISIS, you know, starts to sprout up again there, you know, what can we do over the horizon in terms of protecting the homeland, which is really, as you recall, as we both recall, and your listeners do, that's the reason why we went into Afghanistan. And he answered very firmly that, you know, there will be, you know, bases in the region with other countries that we have agreements with. We also will, you know, we'll have sea-based assets with carriers, you know, in the Gulf region that can make sure that we're not going to repeat the mistakes of 9/11. It's, by the way, if anyone really wants to see that answer, you can go to my congressional website, because it was actually a very, you know, direct answer from the guy who's going to be in charge in terms of making sure that, you know, we don't just sort of, you know, look the other way and, as I said, fall into a situation like 9/11.
Joe Courtney, we love having you on the show, and we love having you as a regular participant on the Congressional Corner. And when we come back the next time, I guarantee you I'm going to have a lot more for you. Joe Courtney is Democrat of Connecticut's 2nd District, in office since 2007.
Great. Thanks, Alan.